Welcome to this week's edition of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm here with Charles Gardner, and there's no shortage of things to talk about as we are just a week away from the regular season opener against the Knicks at the Bradley Center. Charles, I guess the first thing that we can talk about is, we're recording this podcast on Wednesday. On Tuesday night, you were in Madison for the first Bucks game there in quite a while. Can you kind of give a report on what the atmosphere was like over at the Kohl Center and the game itself?
Yeah, Matt, it's good to talk Bucks again here on our third podcast.
Fourth.
My gosh, they keep rolling. Our fourth podcast. And we're getting very close to the regular season, as you said. Yeah, it was a great atmosphere in Madison. 12,000, a crowd of more than 12,000, which was just a terrific crowd. I heard that students all day were asking off their work shifts to try to go over to the game. And it was just a great atmosphere. They cheered loudly for the Bucks. Booed Tyus Jones almost out of the Kohl Center. I never heard such booing.
That's to be expected.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Chanted 38-1, 38-1 at Karl Anthony Towns. So they were really into the game, and the Bucks responded with a great effort, especially in the third quarter. Coach Kidd was very upset with all the turnovers in the first half. The Bucks led 52-50 at halftime, but really broke away in the third quarter. Michael Carter-Williams, who'd been sloppy with the ball in that first half, then really had a great third quarter, scored 11 points, got the offense at the right pace. I talked to MCW and Chris Middleton after the game, and they both said, hey, we want to play fast. We want to play. We've got these young athletic players. We want to push the ball, but we can't be sloppy and giving our opponents easy baskets because we're not handling the ball. And this has been a concern throughout the preseason. And Kidd thought the team was doing a bit better with it, then had a bit of definitely had a setback in the first half last night. But all in all, a very exciting game. Giannis, spectacular dunk put back on a miss by Chris Copeland. And then even better, in my book, was the block on Shabazz Muhammad as Shabazz soared for the dunk, only to see the long arm of the Greek freak swatting it away. And that was quite a play by Giannis. And, of course, the crowd loved those highlight plays. That's what they came to see. But great atmosphere. And Coach Kidd has been very consistent in saying he wants to go back to Madison for training camp. And he made a connection with Bo Ryan. Last night before the game, he and Marcus Landry went up and watched some of the Badgers practice, in the same building before they came downstairs to play the preseason game. So I think it's been a great connection, and it was great to see the Bucks back in Madison, first time since 1999.
Yeah, definitely. And, I don't know if you've gotten the same number of questions that I've gotten over the course of the offseason, but I think the player that most people have talked to me about, aside from asking about Jabari Parker's injury, because that's at the forefront of everyone's mind, but it's got to be MCW. I mean, I think last night's game, gave some ammunition to the people who have a lot of questions about him, but it also gave some ammunition to his apologists, because he showed basically what is detrimental about his game, but also how he can kind of spark the offense and really get things going.
Yeah, no doubt. I think MCW is a big part, obviously, of what the Bucks are trying to do, and they made that trade at the deadline. They obviously think he can be a good defender. He can be an athletic, long point guard. And, Kidd pulled no punches after the game. He said that's too many turnovers for MCW. When I asked him about MCW, and he said, yeah, he played well, but he said too many turnovers in the first half. And that's going to make problems for their offense if that would continue. So, but he was getting to the paint. I know he's been working on his shooting as well. And, you know, he always fills up the box score with those other categories, rebounding, assists. And he did again last night. I think it was 12.7 or 16.7 rebounds, 5 assists. So he came up with a good performance in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be something over the course of the season that I think a lot of people are going to have an eye on. You know, I think there's a shorter leash for him, considering that he kind of came in a trade that was, you know, people weren't 100% certain about, didn't know exactly what the plan was or how he fit. You know, whereas guys like, you know, Giannis or Jabari Parker, you know, if they make mistakes, people are more willing to give them a little bit of slack. Because of the high ceilings that they have and their obvious, you know, importance to the long-term future of the team. So I think we'll definitely be revisiting MCW and his role as we as the season continues. But let's kind of shift away from the game for a minute. You know, on your way to Madison, you know, on Monday, you got caught a little off guard just because you're driving over there, and then out of nowhere, you know, I emailed you and texted you and let you know that I saw something that John Henson had, you know, sent out an Instagram photo, you know, saying that he had been racially profiled in Whitefish Bay, and then you hopped on the story from there. You know, can you kind of explain a little bit of your reporting there and kind of how you handled the situation and what it was like to kind of have that dropped on you at the last second?
Well, this is often how news breaks today in the new media environment. Players have a powerful tool in social media, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, and John expressed himself about that incident. Of course, it went national quickly, and I wound up parking myself at the McDonald's in Edgerton and making a little office there for myself to start work on the story, which was fine.
You got to do that sometimes.
Absolutely.
McDonald's has saved me with their free Wi-Fi many times.
There's our little plug for McDonald's. But anyway, so the story developed throughout the night. We kept working on it, and we received news both from the Whitefish Bay Police Department and from Tom Dixon, who is the president of Schwanke Cast and Jewelers, and we tried to report the entirety of the story and try to report it fairly. That's certainly what we tried to do. It was a difficult story, I would say. And certainly John put his opinion out there. We talked with him again yesterday at the game, and he spoke to the media after shoot around on Tuesday and spoke his mind and spoke very, concisely, I guess I would say. He spoke about what had happened to him, and he said he didn't want anyone else to experience what he had experienced, and that's why he went on Instagram to talk about it. So it was certainly a big story, and whenever there's a racial profiling story or something of that ilk, it's going to get a lot of opinions back and forth, and that this certainly did. Last night John said, "Hey, let's move on. Let's play basketball." I said my piece. I said what I wanted to say, and Now I'm moving on. I think it was also very interesting that the owner, Tom Dixon, met with John at the training center on Tuesday before shoot around and talked with him and apologized to him for the incident where John was locked out of the store and could not go in to buy a watch. So I think it was very, that was certainly a quick movement on a store owner's part and on the Bucks' part to make that meeting happen. And Tom Dixon said that, you know, he was going to take steps so this would not happen again in a similar fashion.
Yeah, I mean, we were following that story. I was following along with you, and you and I were communicating back and forth, you know, throughout the day on Tuesday, since I was working on the production desk that night. And you know, it was, you know, pretty surprising to hear that not only that happened, but all the different twists and turns when we got all the different documents that we've put out there. They're on our site. You know, you reported them. You know, so everyone, I'm sure, has read them at this point. But it's the kind of story that you never want to hear, you know, regardless of who it happens to or where. And you know, hopefully this is something that we won't hear of, you know, anytime soon. Not that issue is going to go anywhere, you know, in terms of, you know, nationally or, you know, in people's day-to-day lives, but it's something that hopefully we won't have to do any reporting on anymore. So we can kind of hopefully move past that, since it was such kind of a crazy and surprising and unfortunate situation.
I thought that Coach Kidd made some good comments yesterday after the shoot around, where he said this was a lesson to all the players. He said this doesn't just happen in Milwaukee. This has happened elsewhere. And he thought it was a lesson for the players and for the community in some respects. And he said this is something that John can ponder later and use when he's speaking to groups or the community, and try to use it in a positive way. And I thought that was a good comment by Coach Kidd. And certainly the players and Coach Kidd, you know, they've talked about this incident, and it's something that they're concerned about, and that they're working as a team on this as well.
Yeah, and I know that John has said in recent days that he plans on at some point doing something stemming from this to create a kind of a positive outcome and to use it as a teaching tool and a lesson for the people. And I think that's, when you're in his situation, I think that's the right message to be sending, that no matter what happens to you, you want to make sure that things like that don't happen to other people, and you want to create, you know, a positive out of a negative as much as you can.
Right. So, I agree.
So I think from there we can move back to the court, you know, refocus on basketball, just like you were saying Jason Kidd was talking about, and you know, and that John Henson wanted to do. And you know, I think we should do our weekly check in on Jabari Parker. I know that there's been some big news since our last podcast, and that he will not be available until November at the earliest.
Yeah, I think the Bucks wanted to clarify the situation. Of course, there's been no timetable, as we've reported, but now there is a bit of a timetable in which they're saying early November. He's not going to be out there for opening night next week against the Knicks, or most likely in the first few games in November. But they are hoping that it will be sometime in November. When that's going to be, is it going to be the first week, second week? You know, we don't know. But I think they wanted to make it clear that he was not going to suddenly appear on opening night against the Knicks. So that was some clarity. Again, he's been practicing and doing all the work, but will not appear in the preseason or in those first two games, and probably beyond that. So there's just no hurry, as we've reported before. They want to make sure that he's ready to go. And he has said, when I come back, I want to be back. I don't want to have a, he doesn't want to have a setback. What I tried to report, given that news, was what will the Bucks do at the four spot? And that's been a theme in my coverage, maybe too much coverage on that, Matt, but that is intriguing. And Giannis is certainly an option there at the four spot. Chris Copeland has shown that he can play that stretch four position. And so I think there are a lot of options that he has. He mentioned Johnny O'Brien, and even John Henson, although Henson hasn't played at the four with Greg Monroe strictly been backing him up so far in the preseason.
Yeah, it's you know, I know that the Bucks are being prudent with Parker, and that holding him out until he's ready is definitely the right move. And I know that it's not going to change the crowd or anything like that. I think they're still going to have a fine crowd for opening night. But it is kind of a buzzkill that Jabari won't be playing. Giannis will be suspended for that Dunleavy hit. You know, talk about this Bucks team and the pillars of the squad for the future. And two of the main ones aren't going to be there on opening night.
That's a tough thing. Yeah, I asked Giannis about that last night, and you know, it's killing him. You know, killing him that he can't play in that game against the Knicks. He said, "Well, I want to play," but he said, "I made a mistake." And so, you know, he knows he can't play in that game. And Matt, that may make that game, you know, pretty tough one against the Knicks. You're not going to have Giannis out there. You're not going to have Jabari. The Knicks have heard all summer about how Greg Monroe, you know, got away from them and went to the Bucks. You think they're going to want to beat the Bucks? I bet they do.
Oh, I'm sure. And then, you know, Porzingis obviously is not a bad player. You know, even though the fans booed him at the draft, you know, they're going to boo anybody. That's just kind of what they do. But, you know, I think getting a look at what he can do and the ways that he can score and benefit their team, I think that'll be definitely a storyline. And, yeah, this game, it's going to be tough. I mean, whenever you have, in any sport, when you have two teams preparing, you know, for months for that one game, you know, you're going to get the best out of it.
It should be a good opener, and at home, where the Bucks have not opened in 30 years. So there still should be a great deal of anticipation. Monroe making his debut, you know, there will still be a great deal. But as you say, it's tough not to have Giannis and Jabari out there. And Giannis said to me last night, he said, "Hey, I just want my teammates to get a victory in that first game." And he said, "I'll be back for the second game and I'll be ready." I'm sure he will.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, and this kind of segues perfectly into what we were planning on talking about next, because we're not going to record our next podcast until after that game against the Knicks next week. And so, you know, that way we can talk about that game and kind of preview the next one and kind of work our way through the season in that way. So we're going to use this next portion of the podcast to talk about season projections and different entities and people who have weighed in on the Bucks and kind of just see what the consensus is. You know, spoiler alert, there's really no consensus.
Yeah.
So, but Giannis, in the survey of GMs this week, he was listed as the second most likely player to have a breakout year, second only to Kevin Durant. I mean, that's pretty high praise from the league's general managers.
Yeah, I think it was second to Andrew Wiggins.
You're right.
Yeah, and then Jabari was third, tied for third with Bradley Beal. So they're saying, you know, Giannis and Jabari can definitely be in the breakout category. And certainly if Jabari has a big year, it would have to be considered a breakout, given that he only played 25 games last season. So I thought that those were interesting. The GMs also rated highly the Bucks' move to acquire Monroe in the offseason as one of the best moves. I think maybe it was third. It was ranked second to, I think, the most surprising move, as we've talked about, the Bucks getting Monroe instead of the Knicks or the Lakers. And I'm sure it would have been first only to be ranked second because DeAndre Jordan, of course, wins that
oh,
award
absolutely.
For committing to Dallas and then changing his mind.
I'm just surprised the GMs didn't like cast their vote via emoji or something. just to totally round that story out.
Exactly. So, but there were some interesting things in the survey, and as you say, there's really no consensus on the Bucks and where they're going to finish.
With the GM survey, you kind of get dual messages because, you know, when asked to rank the Eastern Conference, the Bucks end up coming out seventh, you know, but granted those votes can be kind of skewed because the GMs were asked to rank teams 1 through 4. And so based on those votes, Milwaukee came in at seventh with 2.1% of that vote. But then, you know, later on, you know, asked to name which team will be most improved, the Bucks were listed only behind the Oklahoma City Thunder as projected to be the most improved by the general managers. And the obviously being second to the Thunder means that they're expected to be the most improved team in the East. So, you know, it's hard to balance those two messages considering, you know, one kind of points one direction for the Bucks, and the other one points a different one.
Those are pointing in absolutely opposite directions, because if the Bucks are going to be the second most improved team, they have to get over 41 wins. They have to get, say, 46 wins, 47, or Greg Monroe this week said their goal was 50 wins and a top four seed, he told SiriusXM. Well, those are decent goals. That would, to me, qualify under the GM survey as a most improved. If you're going from 6-4 and you're going to 50 wins, that's very hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, going up from 15 wins to 41 wins, I mean, not that that's not difficult, but it's a lot easier, I think, than going from 41 to 50. You're going from the bottom of the league, you got, you know, it's a lot easier to make up that ground. But now it's really about showing improvement and really being able to win against high caliber competition on a more regular basis.
Yes. Now you're talking, can you go and beat San Antonio? Can you go and beat some of the top teams in the East, Cleveland and Chicago? That's going to be the test for the Bucks. Can they do this? Remember last year, Matt, how they just pounded the teams below them. Their record was something incredible, remember? Against the teams below them in the East, the sub 500 teams. They crushed them. They didn't mess up with that. But they never really beat the good teams. So that is a big step that they have to take. And it was interesting, you were telling me about a report that said they would go 36-46.
Most of the over under betting lines have the Bucks around 44 wins as the over under point, but a projection from 538.com, who, you know, is well known for being founded by Nate Silver and doing a lot of projections and statistical analysis for political elections and things like that. They set up their own projection system that kind of is based off of trying to compare current players to past players with similar wins above replacement and different statistics like that, and to come up with a projected record based on all of those stats kind of thrown together and work through their system. And they have the Bucks at 36-46. So, you know, the GMs think the Bucks are going to be one of the most improved teams in the NBA, and 538 says, maybe not so much.
Maybe not. So we've really got them all over the map here. And I was going to say, you know, if I had to predict, I never would have predicted the 41-41 last year. I think I was in the low 30s.
No, if you predicted that, people would have said, oh, you're crazy.
Right.
And I mean, I had written multiple times in the Bucks blog when I was previewing the NBA draft. I said, hey, they're not going to go to the playoffs this year. And only two teams in NBA history had gone from the worst record to being in the playoffs. And, you know, one of them got Carmelo Anthony, you know, so that kind of helps explain that. And the other one was a Heat team that was actually not that bad. They were just super injured. And then once they got all their guys back, plus, you know, Michael Beasley didn't do anything and they were better.
But they were better. Amazing. So, you know, I would think 36-46, I would flip that around and say 46-36. That would be more on my prediction level. But I will say this about the Eastern Conference. There are a lot of questions. There are a lot of teams there that you don't know which way they're going to go. Miami could be a lot better. Maybe they won't be. You know, you're talking about the Heat. Atlanta, Washington. Washington looks like they will be better to me. But, again, they've got Wall and Beal, great backcourt.
Well, they've had that core group together for, you know, for a couple years now. And, then, you know, obviously they should be better.
They should be pretty good.
They've mixed in their role players in different ways, and obviously Paul Pierce won't be there, and it'll be Jared Dudley instead. But, They know what they're doing. They have a plan, and you know, regardless of what people might think about their head coach, you know, they find ways to win. You know, regardless of who's the coach.
Yeah, Indiana. Paul George is back. He looks healthy.
Did you see his dunk last night?
I did. Yeah, that's incredible.
That was something special. I mean, I've seen a lot of Paul George over the years, and that's one of his more impressive dunks. Just knowing where that's coming from and the injury that he's gone through.
Yeah, that's great to see. That's great to see. So, and you still have Cleveland and Chicago. That should be certainly Cleveland. Most places are predicting them to be back in the finals or to winning the NBA title. So that's at the top of the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. So it will be very interesting to see. But the Bucks, I think, have put themselves in a position when you've got Monroe in there, and if Giannis keeps improving, if he is the breakout player, or if Jabari is the breakout player, then I would argue that augurs very well for the predictions a little bit, closer to 46 or above.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of squarely where you would expect this team to be, considering where they were last year and where they're going. I wouldn't say, you know, obviously 50 wins is their goal, but I don't see them getting there. I think that's still a goal that is probably a year in the offing or more. You know, I think it with the new ownership and the model that John Hammond has explained, this is all about being incremental. And while 26 wins above, you know, their 15 win season looks like a big jump, but getting those wins and getting back to respectability and being competitive, you know, that's one thing. But now jumping up and being in the elite or the top half of the Eastern Conference, I think that's another step, and I don't think that they're necessarily poised to do that this year, but I think with bringing back the kind of players that they'll have, you know, considering their contract situation 2 years from now, I think they'd be in a better position to do that. So I'm kind of with you on where they would be. I'm kind of more towards 44 or 45 wins. Not that that's a huge difference,
right.
But
no.
that's kind of where I would put my expectation level for this team this year.
Yeah, I think that's right in the ballpark. And 46, 46 would be very good in my view. So you'd be talking, that puts you in, that probably puts you in the running for a top four seed or very close.
Right, and as we mentioned in our first podcast, that this year, you know, the divisions don't matter. It's just whatever order you're in, that's where you go into the playoffs.
The record. So
So you know, even though, you know, the Bucks are in a very difficult division with the Cavaliers and the Bulls, you know, not even to mention the Pacers and the Pistons. You know, just the Cavs and the Bulls are projected to be the top two teams in the Eastern Conference, you know, by a lot of different places. You know, they'll have that uphill battle, but they could still have a decent ranking in the East just based off their record if they can handle their business elsewhere.
Oh, no doubt. And we saw that last year that, you know, some of the other divisions weren't so competitive. So, right. And now that the divisions are taken out of that, it kind of clarifies things. So it's just going to be that Eastern Conference standings. That's what you got to watch. And I think they're definitely going to be a factor in the race. You know, it's going to be very intriguing. And they start out the season with, you know, games against Toronto, the Knicks. They play twice almost in the first week. They play Brooklyn. So we're going to find out a few things. You know, they play Washington at home, the second game of the season. So it'll be an interesting start as well to the season. There's a chance for them to get off, you would say, maybe to a good start, but we shall see.
Yeah, and after running around with Wisconsin football and, you know, handling stuff with Marquette like last night, and while you were in Madison, I was catching up with a four-star recruit who committed to Marquette, and so I was pulled away from the game from watching it for a little bit. But after kind of getting pulled in a bunch of different directions, I'll be there with you next week when the Bucks take on the Knicks and the Wizards. So I'm excited to get my first in person look at the Bucks this year. And
tremendous. That'll be tremendous. You'll be there, and we're going to have Gary D'Amato, our new sports columnist now, will be at the game Wednesday. So we'll have full coverage on that opening game, the season opener against the Knicks, and also the next game. And then I'll head out to Toronto for the first road game. I think I go on Halloween, Matt. So that'll be an interest, but that'll be an interesting place to start the road schedule. They got a back-to-back with Toronto and Brooklyn. So four games coming up quickly.
Yeah, I mean, we're hitting the ground running. You had such an easy schedule here with only six preseason games. You're going to get thrown right into the fire.
Yeah, just one more at Minnesota, and I'll be going up there on Thursday. But it has been a good preseason schedule, and I think it's allowed the team to get a lot of work done. And as we discussed last week, Jason had said four games was fine with him. So I think in the preseason, I think it's been ideal in a way. I've talked to some of the other sports writers around the league who've had Jerry Zagoda from the Star Tribune was at the game Tuesday in Madison, and he was just coming from Memphis. And so there, some teams didn't have as nice a preseason schedule as the Bucks have had.
Yeah. Well, Charles, I think that's everything we laid out to cover and talk about, unless you could think of anything we forgot.
No, I think we're good. And next week, Matt, we'll be back with a regular season version, our first regular season version of the Bucks podcast. So I hope everybody will tune in, and we'll have some talk about that game against the Knicks here next Wednesday.
All right, great. So thank you all for joining. You can always download the podcast in iTunes and subscribe. You can also find it on jsonline.com/bucks, and if that's not where you found it already right now. And we'll be back next week to talk regular season. So thanks for joining.